Thanks, Tom. And Dina Floberg, welcome to KABU.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So, Dina Floberg, tell us about Free Press, what they do, and particularly your role.
Right. So at Free Press, we fight to have democratic, open media policies for the internet and more traditional media. That includes things like net neutrality, fighting media consolidation, and trying to promote universal and affordable access. As a policy analyst, I contribute to a lot of our legal research and legal writing as we fight for those kinds of policies inside Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh. Last week, we all suffered a setback under their new chairman, the FCC. New chairman's a Trump nominee, created a 3-2 Republican majority. The FCC voted to end net neutrality rules. Dina, in this interview, we're going to mostly discuss a good deal of how to regain not just the net neutrality rules, but to really advance ideas of free speech and free expression and participation in the great discussions and challenges that face the world. But first, why is net neutrality itself so important?
Well, net neutrality really effectively is the First Amendment of the Internet. It prevents these big Internet service providers like Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon from censoring or discriminating against content online that they don't like. Without net neutrality, it's possible for your Internet service provider to make it even harder for you to access some content online or to charge you more to do that. And what we've seen is that the Internet increasingly is an incredibly valuable platform for people to share their stories, to communicate with each other, for small and innovative businesses to start, and also for social movements to take root. We often see that marginalized voices, whether they be women, people of color, LGBTQ youth, disabled folks, don't have as much access to traditional media platforms. And so the Internet gives all of those voices the opportunity to tell their own stories and to organize for change. So losing net neutrality rules means that all of that potential and all of that freedom and openness is suddenly at risk.
Yeah, the Internet now has become our public sphere, and it's a public sphere that's international. In lots of ways, people can communicate in ways that they never were able to, and there's far more, in fact, sort of sophistication and understanding of things to the extent that alternative views can compete with the deluge of commercial media. There's increasing sophistication even in the most rural areas. In fact, that's another problem, isn't it, whereas the big providers, AT&T and Verizon, have a monopoly, basically, and they justify it by saying, well, we're going to give universal service like the phone companies or other public utilities. In fact, they're not doing that. They're not investing in other. I mean, there's all kinds of communities that have either very slow service or no service at all from those monopoly providers.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we're seeing here is that's part of how these big ISPs are trying to justify taking away net neutrality, is they're once again trying to sort of bribe policymakers and saying, if you take away this critical protection, this critical non-discrimination protection that consumers and internet users and activists really need, we promise that we will build out, we'll invest in these communities, we'll make sure that there's competition and access. But we've heard that line before. We hear it from corporate gatekeepers all over the place, that if we just give them free rein, then all of the benefits will eventually trickle down to people. And what we've seen is that never actually comes true.
Yeah, their profit needs, it seems to supersede their the great public commitments to the public service that they espouse through their lobbyists and through their paid media. My sense is that also it's a it becomes a protection racket for the biggest companies with the deepest pockets. They may have to pay a little bit more, but they will be in first position always and be able to promise much faster service, right? You go on Amazon and you'll get to wherever you're going in a second and a half. But anybody competing, or even any small business that isn't sort of an Amazon on their part of their operation, it may take 10 seconds or 20 seconds or even more for anything, even if you try and get in touch with them, even to be able to get access to them. And they're just going to lose out as people, because people get accustomed to this very, very fast service.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely the case. We see a lot of the ISPs and their lobbyists saying that this is just a fight between Comcast and Google or between Comcast and Amazon, and that's really not true. The people that most stand to be hurt by losing net neutrality rules are real people and small businesses and people who are trying to get their start, because you're right, they absolutely won't be able to pay whatever extra tolls the internet service provider asks them to pay in order to reach their customers or their communities and to really get their message across.
Yeah. And that's also, of course, true of information outlets, right? The ones that the billionaires set up, what's a couple more million dollars to them? Whereas organizations like Free Press, you don't have $50 million to give to Comcast and AT&T and Verizon to carry you on their faster service. It seems to me what it does is it just it gradually favors the biggest, richest, most predatory interests.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what we see going on here, and that's why we think of this as a non-discrimination law. The internet has always been an open platform that anyone can use to start sharing their message, to sell their product, to talk to different people, to organize for change. And without net neutrality rules in place, we will instead see that the only voices being heard are the profitable ones, as opposed to anybody who has a story to tell.
Yeah, you know, I think of that in terms of things like this great struggle now in sports, where mostly black athletes, but supported by a lot of white athletes, have supported the Black Lives Matter movement and other movements by people of color to fight back against what has been a sort of plantation mentality of the people on the top, as well as the use of lethal force to make sure that the communities stay oppressed and frightened. All of that would just not. The owners, of course, are apoplectic, as is Trump, that those voices are heard and even sometimes get on TV, not as much now as during the heyday of it, and they're sort of winning, but not as the big interests. But without net neutrality, in fact, those movements would have had a lot of trouble even starting and developing and building that audience and building that critical mass.
Right. I mean, Black Lives Matter started as a hashtag, and there have been so many of those stories that we have needed the internet to tell. Absolutely. The football player's stance, we saw the hashtag take a knee. We have the hashtag MeToo movement that's trying to bring attention to sexual assault. There's all of these different movements, standing with Standing Rock, that have used the internet to raise awareness, to connect people, to get donations and support for causes that are struggling, and to really help organize and start movements for change. Normally, it would be much harder for someone with a great idea and a passion to change things and to move our society in a more democratic direction to get on more traditional media platforms. But with the internet, they can go on, they can start using a hashtag, start talking to people online. And we've seen that create a lot of offline movement as well. We've seen obviously a lot of these movements grow into offline spaces because net neutrality gave them the freedom to set down their roots, to start speaking to people, to connect with enough people that you can actually make change.
Yeah, this is KBOO Radio 90.7 FM, Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Dina Floberg of the organization Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund that have been fighting for net neutrality, not just in the last couple of years when the Obama administration finally, a 3-2 majority, passed the rules, but for a very long time because it was very clear that a free and open internet was anathema to the forces on top of this society who would really greatly prefer not allowing, used to be in the 18th century, they would, well, those are all stories of how they kept, how people were divided ethnically and many other ways to fight one another rather than, in fact, demand a better share of the surplus of the wealth they were producing, sufficient to raise a family. That was not an interest of the people who ran things, and they did a pretty good job for a long time of keeping people divided. Now the internet has a tremendous potential for building that movement from below, and it appears that at least now the big predators have won a battle. What do we do? This is hardly won right now. It's going to anger many people, although it's going to be a complicated process. How are they going to respond, the big providers? I'm afraid that it's going to be very gradual. They're smart, and they know how to do things. Tell us about that. How will they respond, and how do we respond?
Yeah, I think we would expect that too. Right now, they want to, a lot of the providers have been saying, we don't need net neutrality rules because we promise we'll be good anyways. And so we expect that probably some of those violations will be slow in coming. They'll be subtle. They'll be sold in a way that tries to make it seem like it's some new creative thing when in fact it's just Comcast charging you more for worse service. And the way that we think we have to respond to this is, one, we have to be vigilant and ready for when they make these violations, and two, we need to take them to court. Free Press will be suing the FCC to roll back the decision that they have made so that we can reinstate the strong net neutrality protections that the Obama-era FCC put in place. There's also energy on the Hill where we have net neutrality supporters in Congress pushing CRA legislation that could effectively undo the FCC's recent decision and once again just put those rules back in place so that we can defend ourselves against the net neutrality violations that the big internet service providers want to pursue.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking, I thought, gosh, yes, I know if I were their PR person or Madison Avenue person, I would already be devising the ads for them. New choices for internet active people. All the new choices that you're getting. Of course, you have to pay a whole lot more, and it's at the expense of everybody else. My sense is that it's going to take let me give you a hypothesis. That we build like Free Press and other, the ACLU, many others, who are fighting for free speech and free press and access and participation. And they affiliate with so many other organizations. We could have a tremendous movement which, if it takes in both the states and at some point in the federal government, that would go way beyond just net neutrality would be a first step. It seems to me there are many other threats actually to speech that Free Press deals with. And why don't you? I'm sure you agree that great movement is. We have to fight in the courts and the rest of it, and sometimes we can win. But that also can be part of the building of that movement. You have to struggle. The movements have to do something. But tell us about about how free press operates. Net neutrality is part of it. There's so many other threats.
Right. A huge part of free press's goal is to try and bring the people and the public into these decision-making. And we've seen that a lot on net neutrality. We saw millions of people come out. We've seen hundreds of thousands of phone calls being made about net neutrality. And you're absolutely right. Net neutrality is so important because it is a first step to every other fight that we have to have. At Free Press, we fight for a media system that is going to protect and foster democracy, that is open for all. And there are a lot of barriers to that that we've seen in traditional media, in new media, and there are a lot of different fights that have to be had to make sure that all voices can speak, that all voices can be heard, that we can do so without being surveilled, that we can do so without being censored. That everyone can do so regardless of how much money they have to pay for internet access or other media access. So all of these are important fights that we need, and one of the reasons that net neutrality is so critical is that it gives us the opportunity to have those fights and to organize for that change online so that we can build a better, more democratic media system all around and fight for all of these other issues beyond media reform to build a stronger democracy.
All right, Dina Floberg, thanks a lot. And this is KABU Radio, of course, and we are one of those alternative sources that's always, in fact, threatened and challenged by insufficient funds. Thanks to all who renewed or gave us a gift or became new members in our recent membership drive. And it's not too late to become a radio activist. Dina, it was really good talking to you. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Right. Dina Floberg of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund. If you want to donate to KABU and them, just look both of us up on the web. We give you every opportunity. Thanks a lot for listening.